So I came across this article recently that it was describing this woman who had this weird dysfunction with her brain, that her amygdala had been damaged in her brain, which is a very unique part of the brain. And the thing that they had long thought is that your amygdala controls your sensation of fear. And so they were studying this woman, and they found that this woman couldn't feel fear. And they kept putting her in different unique situations, putting her in places where, like, she was with poisonous snakes or spiders, or she was up on a high building, or all these different things in which someone would normally be afraid. And she'd talk about not liking it, not interested, but that she didn't feel fear. She never felt the emotion or the sensation of fear, which to me was just like mind-boggling to think of. And especially the one where they were talking about, like, putting her up on this high tower because, and that she didn't feel fear. Because, like, for me, people say that I have a fear of heights. I don't have a fear of heights. I have a fear of falling from great heights. And those are very different. And I don't know if you have, you guys, like, watch those videos. They'll pop up on my Facebook feed of, like, the person who's jumping from building to building, like, for no reason, like, running on these skyscrapers and jumping between the two. And they've got, like, the first person camera shot. And, like, I can't watch it without my fingers getting all tingly. Like, I can't do it. It's terrifying to me. We actually had this instance that I had to recall with my wife to make sure expectations were clear for this Christmas. That last Christmas, she really wanted us to put lights all the way on our house, to line our whole house with lights. And I was like, I can do that. It's my house. I'm the man of the house. I can put lights on my house. And so I put lights on, like, the first row, because we kind of like the first roof, and then there's a little bit of roof, some shingles. And she's like, no, I want them on both. I was like, both? Yeah, I want them on both of the first set of, like, line on the gutter and the second story line on the gutter. So I, like, tried to put the ladder to get it, and it wouldn't quite reach the second one. So I had to climb up on the second story on the roof, and it was a lot steeper than I thought it was, and it was a lot higher than I thought it was. And I kind of got stuck. Like, so I'm just sitting on my roof and neighbors are driving past and I'm, like, trying really hard to play it cool. Like I'm just looking out my roof. Like, well, yeah, it's all there. Yep. Everything seems to be here. We're good. And I was about 10 seconds from calling the fire department, like, hey, help. Like, this is the opposite of I fall and I can't get up. It's I got up and I can't get down. And eventually I just mustered up, and it wasn't really courage. It was less, I realized that the fear of embarrassment exceeded the fear of heights in that moment. That just the story of, like, my pastor was stuck on his roof like a cat in a tree and the fire department had to come get him. I didn't want that story to get out. And so I eventually made my way down. And so I'm reading this article about this woman who doesn't feel fear. And I just thought, man, what would that be like? What would that be like if you didn't have that? What would that be like? And so this is the question that I've been thinking through, is what would you do if you weren't afraid? What would you do if you weren't afraid? And I want to make sure we're thinking of that question in the proper context. I don't want you to think of what would I have done? Because it's easy to look at our past as if all our fear lived in our past and we would have done things differently in our past. If guilt wouldn't have been predominant, if comfort wouldn't have been as significant. I go, I would have made that decision. I would have had that conversation. I would have changed that relationship. I would have done this different. I don't want you to think of it in that terms. What would you do now, in this moment? What would you do if you weren't afraid? What conversation have you been putting off because you don't know how it will go? What decision have you been sitting back upon? Somehow thinking the idea that if I give it more time, the decision will be easier. What opportunity is waiting for you that fear has left you sidelined for? What would you do in your relationships, in your career, in your faith? What would you do if you weren't afraid? And the thing that I have realized more and more is that our lives are not limited by our physical abilities or our imagination. Our lives are primarily limited by the shackles of our fear that keeps us back and that holds us on the sidelines. And we operate under this idea that I need to get rid of fear in order to move forward, that if I could eliminate the fear from my life, then I'd have a pathway forward. But today I want to show you that there is a better way, there's a different way. Because unless if you're like that woman and you have brain damage, which you might have brain damage, but my guess is you're not like that woman, is you will always have fear in your life in some way. So today I want to show you that different path. I'd like for you to tell the person next to you the title of the message for today. The title of the message is Do It Scared. Apparently that was too scary for some of you to actually do. So let's try that again. Turn to the person around you. Turn to the person on the other side of you who you intuitively said that you like a little less than the person who you originally turned to. And turn to them and say, do it scared. There we go. Today we're going to be in the book of Ezra. The book of Ezra. And the book of Ezra is this very unique account. It's a small book, so if you need to use the table of contents, there's no shame in using the table of contents if you brought your own Bible. If not, you can use the BCM Bible or follow along online. The BCM Bible is our gift to you if you don't have one. The book of Ezra takes place that we have followed the nation of Israel for many centuries through the account that begins the story of God's work that we call the Bible today. And what has happened is we've seen the nation of Israel move from a period of bondage and slavery to freedom in which they live in the land that God has promised them. And then because of disobedience and other factors, they are taken out of the land that God has promised them and they go into a period of exile. And then through what can only be described as God working, the emperor, the king at the time, turns his heart back towards these foreigners living in his own land and he allows a pocket of them to return to their nation and to their city. So the book of Ezra picks up 48 years after the Israelites have been forced to leave their own land and taken captive to a small group returning to the nation of Israel and returning to the city of Jerusalem. And this is one of those accounts. Today we're only going to look at three verses. We're going to look at chapter 3, verse 1 through 3. And in these three verses could be books and books of the things that took place. And today all we get is the Cliff Notes version, which for some of you, you go, I'm comfortable with the Cliff Notes version. That's how I got through high school. Thank you very much for the Cliff Notes version. So let's look at it. Ezra chapter 3, verse 1 through 3, it says this. In early autumn, so you can just read that as pumpkin spice season in the nation of Israel. In early autumn, when the Israelites had settled in their towns, all of the people assembled in Jerusalem with a unified purpose. Then people's names, who you won't remember, Jeshua, son of Jehozadak, joined his fellow priests in Zerubbabel. That's fun. Turn to your neighbor, say Zerubbabel. You had more fun. Zerubbabel. We had this thing with our kids. This is for anyone who's expecting. The way we picked out the names for our children, like we had to like it, but it had to pass this test. So for every kid, I figured the primary time I'm going to be saying their name is when I'm screaming, which proved to be accurate. And so when my wife was saying, like, what if we called him this? I'd have to yell it multiple times and see if it still worked out. And Zerubbabel passes the test. So if anyone's interested, it's up for grabs, okay? Zerubbabel. Join his fellow priests and Zerubbabel, son of Shealtiel, does not pass the test, with his family in rebuilding the altar of the God of Israel. They wanted to sacrifice burnt offerings on it as instructed in the law of Moses, the man of God. So they're recreating this place of worship. They're recreating this place that they gather together to worship God. And then verse 3 is so important. Even though the people were afraid of the local residents, so we have object, we have purpose within there. We have, they want to rebuild the city. We find real quickly in here, Cliff Notes version, conflict. The people were afraid of the local residents because they're opposing them. Even though the people were afraid of the local residents, they rebuilt the altar at its old site. Then they began to sacrifice burnt offerings on the altar to the Lord each morning and evening. Even though the people were afraid, they rebuilt the altar at its old site. Let's leave that up verse up there. If you're following along, just kind of hang on to that for a second. I always used to think that, like, I don't know what it was, that like the great people who went before us, that they weren't afraid. Like, I always had that idea. Like, as we talked about these great figures in history, as we talked about, like, the leaders of the civil rights movement or the leaders of of our independence as a country, or went back through the Bible and looked at these accounts of Joshua and David and Moses and Paul and Peter and all these people and over again, I always had this thought that, like, these people are fearless. Like, they must have never felt fear to do the things that they did. And then I come across this, and we find this incredible thing that the people return to the city, and it says, they're afraid. They're afraid. And there's a part of me that looks at them and is like, what is that? I thought they weren't afraid. I thought that's what made them truly great. But as we look a little deeper into it, we see that not only is that not the case, it can't be the case. Because there is something about fear that has the power to transform us like few other things can. Let me go outside the Bible for a second for a reference. In the movie The Dark Knight Rises, way outside the Bible, okay? There is a man who is thrown in to a prison cave. Full disclosure, it's Batman, okay? Don't want to be a big spoiler, but it's Batman who's in the cave, okay? So he's been thrown into this, like, deep pit that serves as a prison, and he's attempting to get out over and over again. And so in order to climb out of this cave, it said only one person, a small child before, is the only person to get out of the cave. He has to climb up all these different ledges, and then there's this particular spot where he has to jump a great distance from one ledge to another ledge. And so he keeps trying, and he ties a rope that's kind of halfway up the cave to save him if he falls, and he keeps trying over and over again, and he keeps failing. And almost every day, he'll climb back up, and he'll attempt to make the jump, and he's not strong enough. He can't quite make it. And then we're introduced to this unique character in the story, this character who's there is kind of like this sage character, this wise mentor. And he says, you're not afraid. And he gives, like only Batman can, I'm not going to do it in my Batman voice because it's terrible. But he goes, no, I'm not afraid. I'm angry. And I think there's a lot of truth there. That's a whole nother message, that how often our anger is just fear disguised as rage. How often, especially men, how often in moments that we're yelling or we're screaming about something not going our way because it's really not going the direction that we want it to go because we feel uncomfortable about that direction. And if someone would actually ask us, why are you so mad? We wouldn't have the courage to answer or the self-awareness to say, I'm not mad, I'm scared. He goes, I'm not scared, I'm mad, I'm angry. And so he keeps trying it over and over again. And then this character has this brilliant insight. He says, you think your lack of fear makes you strong. Your lack of fear makes you weak. Because there is something about fear that propels us to a new height. And so he says, if you want to make the jump, you have to do it like the boy did, without the rope, without that security there. You have to make the jump without the rope, and that fear will find you again. It'll make you stronger than before. So to make sure you're not concerned, he makes the jump. He gets out of the cave. But I think there's something interesting within there of that idea that we think the people who went before us weren't afraid. And so as we think through what our lives are meant to be and what our lives are called to be, we have imaginations of a greater future, of a greater purpose, of greater challenges before us. Of doing something significant, of having great accomplishments. And the thing that I realize that is taking place there is while we want something greater and we think that fear is the obstacle, what is actually happening is God is using that fear to transform us. You see, there is something about fear that shapes our character in a way that nothing else can. And while we want the fear to be removed, God keeps the fear there to change our character. And this is what I have come to believe, that the challenges you face will only rise in proportion to the character that you are willing to develop. And I often hear of people who daydream about significance or daydream about accomplishment or daydream about doing good, and yet they don't have the character in order to go through the difficulty, and so it's always elusive to them. The challenges you face will only rise in proportion to the character that you are willing to develop. And so there's this important note on the people of Ezra's day that is so significant. In verse 3, it says this. This is how it begins. Even though the people were afraid. Even though the people were afraid of the local residents, and I wonder if we just switched one small thing, how much their lives, how much their story, how much today would change. What if it read like this instead? Because the people were afraid. Because that's often how our lives read, don't they? Why'd you do that? I was scared. Why didn't you do that? I was scared of this. Why didn't you have that conversation? Well, I don't really know how it's going to go. You know, they kind of get mad. It may not be good. But is what you're living in now not good? No, it's not good. So why don't you do it? I don't know. I'm not really scared. I don't really want to do that. Right? If this reads as because the people were afraid, all of history is different because of it. But instead it says, even though the people were afraid of the local residents, they rebuilt the altar at its old site. Then they began to sacrifice burnt offerings and they began to praise God. Even though. See, this contrast between even though and because changes everything. You see, what it's saying in this moment is it's saying, no, they didn't eliminate fear, which is what we often think we need to do. If I'm gonna do this, I have to get rid of fear. They didn't get rid of fear. They didn't eliminate it. But it also didn't have power over them. Fear was present, but its power was removed. You see, the power of fear is to paralyze you to an individual moment. And for some of us, it may be our past that we're locked in, not just stylistically, but mentally to 20 years ago. Don't have to nudge anyone around you. And it's like we keep reliving those days that we used to be in because we can't get past it, or it might be this present moment. The things are before you, you can't move forward because of it, because fear has paralyzed you into that. And what these people show us is that they go, you don't need to eliminate fear to move forward. My story is not because I was afraid. It's even though I was afraid. They stared fear down in the face and they moved forward anyway. And that's what I want for you today. Last week, we introduced this idea of our comfort object. And we still have it here because we never clean up things around here. Isn't that nice how it's still there? Woo, that would have been bad. We introduced this idea of our comfort object, our security blanket, and our calling. And we said for each one of us, we have something that we find security in. Hopefully, most of us have gotten rid of our blankies because most of the kids have gone by now. But we do, we have different things that we find security in. It might be a relationship, it might be a position, it might be a mentality. It may be quite literally a spot that you're used to. It might be the pew that you're sitting in, that you sit in the same pew every week. Your name is not on it, but your butt print is firmly there. Please don't email me. But we do. We have security objects. We have things that we hold on to that make us feel comfortable. For some people, it's just a mentality. One of the ones I see most common is the ability to blame other people for the things that have gone on in our lives. Why is your attitude like that? Well, because them. Why are you like this? Because my boss, because my work, because my kids, because my spouse. It's because of them that I'm like this, and that's our security blanket. That's the thing that we hold on to that relieves us of the responsibility of our own decisions and attitude. And while we also have a security blanket, we pursue calling. Calling being the intersection of your gifts, your circumstances, and God's will. Calling being not just your story, but God's story that you get caught up in. And this is where we ended last week, as we said simply this, is that while you want calling, you will never be able to find calling while you are still holding on to your security blanket. Calling will always remain elusive to you as long as you are firmly grasping what you are comfortable with, because calling always comes outside our comfort. But here's my only fear in terms of where we landed last week and where we left off. Is maybe we ended with the thought that as soon as I let go of what I'm comfortable with, I get to pick up what God has for me. And that's actually not the case. You see, while you cannot find calling while you're holding on to comfort, what you'll find is this, is that when you let go of comfort, you often exist right here. For a period of time. You exist in this in-between space in which you're no longer firmly grasping what you're used to. You're no longer taking hold of what you're comfortable with, but you don't quite yet know what God has for you. You're not quite sure what he has prepared for you in advance. And this space right here is really, really hard to live in. This space right here is awkward. It's uncomfortable. And this is where fear becomes the most prominent in our lives. And you'll have this thought. You'll have this thought over and over again, that the presence of fear must mean the absence of God. If I'm scared, if I'm afraid, why should I feel that way? God's not with me, because if he was with me, I wouldn't be afraid. But this is what I want you to see today, that the presence of fear does not mean the absence of God. The presence of fear necessitates the importance of God. It shows why God is so significant, because there are two lies that you'll be told while you exist in this space. And if you know the lies, they lose their power. That's another note. That's completely aside the sermon. You're welcome for that. No one paid any money for that note right there. That wasn't in my notes, okay? There are two lies. As soon as you can name the lie, it loses its power. The next time you're driving home from work and you feel like you don't matter at all and you feel like you're worthless, or the next time you did something with your kids and they didn't listen or nothing happened, just say it out loud. Say, I am believing that I do not matter at all and my life is worthless. And then you can have a good laugh at yourself. Throw your head back, laugh like, that's ridiculous. And as soon as we name the lie, it loses its power. And so when you exist here, there's two lies that we're often told. The first lie is this, is that you are alone. You see, fear always isolates the individual. It makes you feel that you are the only one who has ever felt this. You're the only one who's ever been there. You're the only one who's ever existed in this space where you're not comfortable, you don't know where you fit, and you don't know what's ahead of you. Fear will isolate the individual. And the second thing that fear will do is it will eternalize the immediate. You feel, I'm sad, and so I must be sad forever, because I can't see an end date to this feeling. I'm lonely, so I must be lonely forever. I don't know what's ahead of me. I'm uncertain, so I must feel uncertain forever. And these are the lies that are told when we exist here. But this is also why faith is so essential. Because every single one of us has this opportunity. We have the opportunity to decide whether the story of our life will be told within the context of fear or within the context of faith. You have that decision. You have that opportunity to decide. When people tell the story of my life, will it be because he was afraid, because she was afraid, because they were afraid, they did this, or they didn't do that, or they missed out on that? Or will your story be because they had faith, even though they were afraid, they moved forward, they took that path that was ahead of them, they did what they knew they were called to do? Because when you exist here, what you're gonna constantly feel the desire to do is to run back to what's comfortable. And some of us, what we've done is we've kind of let go of that blanket and we walked into this space and we already have our exit plan. As soon as this goes wrong, I'm going back here. We already have our quick evacuation. Like, I've already searched out the exits. I know where I need to go. I'm ready to go. But that's not what God has for us. See, this is my hope. This is my hope for me and this is my hope for you. My hope for me is that I want, when people tell the story of my life, my kids or whoever else recount the things that I did and what my life was like, I want it to only be explainable within the context of faith. That's my desire. That's what I'm hoping to move towards. They go, why did they do that? Why did they say this? Why did they go here? Why were they a part of that? That if you didn't have faith, that my decisions would make no sense. Because I want my life to only be rational within the context of faith. And I want you to live with that same level of boldness, that you would be able to go, why did they do this? It's because even though fear was there, I moved forward. Even though fear was there, I knew that I had a path ahead of me. Even though fear was present, I knew that God had something for me just beyond that. And so my encouragement to you today is really, really simple. It's whatever that fear is, whatever that thing is that you would do if you weren't afraid, to do it scared. To say, no, I don't have to eliminate fear to move forward. I can move forward anyway. And so this is what I started asking. Over the last couple weeks, many of you have been part of a social experiment that I've been conducting without your knowledge or permission. Thank you very much, okay? This is what I want to know. I wanted to know, for the people who let go of this, but who weren't quite here, for the people who abandoned comfort and didn't yet have calling, I wanted to know this. I want to know, why'd you move forward? What was that? What made you move forward in your life? What made you keep going? And so I started asking. I said, hey, what moment in your life, when were you afraid? I did it over lunch, side conversations. So say I switched that job. I go, were you scared? Yeah. Why'd you do it? Why'd you move forward? I never gave the preface. This is for a sermon illustration. I'm really looking forward to this because then I get very different answers. Oh, God. Yeah, God. Praise Jesus. Yeah, I just prayed and God. And I was, and then God spoke to me. I thought you said your boss called you. Yeah, but it was God. So I didn't give that preface, but I want to know why. Why is that? And then this is what I have observed mostly. You've heard the phrase of the, if you put a frog in a pot and slowly turn up the heat, it will boil without attempting to jump out. Put a frog in a pot. Are you familiar with that phrase? Am I making that up? Did I spend too much time in Kentucky? Is that just the Kentucky phrase? Okay, so we're on the same page. All right, good. Thank you. Thanks for your reaction. Goodness gracious, dead eyes all over the crowd. Frog pot in a boil. Going well. And so this is what I've experienced, is that most often we only change when we have to. So we say, why'd you switch that job that you hated? Because I was fired. Got it. Why'd you leave that relationship that you knew was unhealthy? She broke up with me. Okay, cool. Like, that's most often where we are. We're like, I only change when I'm forced to, even when it's bad. And so I want to know, for the people who let go of it and still move towards calling, why did they move forward? Why'd you advance when it would have been easier to run back to comfort? And I hope this answer makes sense, because I heard it in different ways, but it all had this common theme. As people would say something like this: I had to pursue what I needed more than what I wanted. At a certain point in time, I had to come to the decision that I was going to take steps towards what I needed more than what I wanted in that moment. Let me show it to you in Ezra, and then I'll explain it how I heard it. In Ezra chapter 3, verse 1, it starts with this. In early autumn, pumpkin spice season, when the Israelites had settled in the towns and all the people assembled in Jerusalem with a unified purpose. It says they gathered together, not just because it was easy, not just because it was simple, but they gathered together because they had a unified purpose. And this is what I heard people say: I wanted comfort. I needed purpose. I wanted what I was used to. I needed to live a life that mattered. I wanted ease and stability, but I needed opportunity and adventure. That eventually, at a point in time, someone said, yeah, the fear was still there, but eventually the fear of missing out on opportunity was greater than the fear of what could happen if I took this risk. The fear of what was I missing out on and what God was going to do became a greater fear than simply, I was scared about what might happen and what people might think of me. And this is the thing that I think distinguishes us as humans over Brilliant Sermon Insight frogs. Is while a frog will stay in the pot and lose its life because they don't have the awareness to jump out when it gets too hot, you are able to jump out. You are able to make that decision that I don't have to let go, but I need to let go. I want comfort, but I need purpose. I want stability and ease, but I need a life that is more significant. I need a life that matters. Or maybe if I could switch the metaphor and make it just terribly confusing for all of us, okay? Some of you may be drowning in a life that is void of passion. Some of you may be suffocating in a life that has no significance. In the ordinariness of your routine, I might have made that word up, is what is crushing you. And so maybe you actually need to jump into the pot and to turn up the heat a little bit and to know what it's like to actually be alive. Some of you, maybe the greatest obstacle you're facing in your life right now is it all seems dull and it all seems regular. And yes, while I want that ease and I want that simplicity, there's something greater that I need. I need to know what passion is like. I need to know what meaning and significance is like. And so I'm going to take that risk, even though it's a risk, because God's not going to eliminate the fear because he's seeking to transform me and move to what I know I need to be and move to know what I know he has for me. And so I had this conversation with my girls recently. We were at an amusement park, and they're terrified of all things heights and fast and loud noises. And just basically describe an amusement park and they're scared, okay? That's kind of where it begins. And so I was like, we had this thought, I'm very economic in my parenting, and it was, hey, listen, here's the deal. I'm not spending all this money for us to come here for you to do nothing, okay? I'm not spending all this money for us to come here for me to spend $8 for a hot dog, okay? That's not happening. I can promise you that's not happening. And so we talked about the roller coasters that were there. Say, listen, here's the rule. 8-year-old, 6-year-old, if the 4-year-old is tall enough to do it, you have to do it, okay? Maddie, Emmy, if Molly, the 4-year-old, if she's tall enough to do it, you're in. It's not a question. Like, it's happening. And so we'd like go up to some of the rides and they make Molly go up to the height thing and test herself, and she'd stand up at the height thing. And they'd be like, Molly, scrunch down. Molly, come on, get small. Take off your shoes, Molly, come on. It's tall enough. Molly, you can choose. That's fine. You're 4. You can choose. You guys are going with me. And yeah, to have some of those moments where like you feel incredibly judged by the 16-year-old attending the ride. You'd be there, like get your kids there and they're crying and they're screaming and they're like, no, no, don't take me. Don't take me. And I'm like, quit saying don't take me. They're thinking I'm stealing you. I'm trying to give you away. Quit saying don't take me. You're like, no, no, don't take me. Don't take me. And like the person look at you and be like, do you guys really want to go? Do you really want to go? I was like, press the button. Don't judge me, 16-year-old with a summer job. Press the button. We're here. And so we go through those. And so we're at a certain moment. We're about to enter the roller coaster. We're about to get on. And Maddie looks at me and she's scared. Like she's crying. She's going through. She's like, I'm scared. I just looked at her. I said, that's fine. Do it scared. Do it scared. Do it crying, do it kicking, do it screaming, do it terrified, that's fine. But I'm not gonna let you miss out on this. And so she did it, and she gets off, and she looks at me, and she goes, can we do it again? Can we do it again? I said, absolutely. Hear me this morning. Your life matters. It matters. Like you must believe that. You must believe that you're not an accident, that you're not here by random chance, that your life is not insignificant. You must believe that your life matters, that you were created for a purpose, that you have meaning and significance before you. God does not waste people. If you are still here, you have a purpose. You may not know it yet. You may not know it for a little bit, but if you're holding on to security, you will never know it. If you're holding on to comfort, it will always elude you. Your life matters. And so do not allow your life to be derailed by fear. Do not allow your significance and your calling and your character to be sidelined by fear that has no business in your heart, in your soul. There is too much at stake for you. There's too much at stake for those around you. For you allow your life to be explained by because they were afraid instead of even though they were afraid. There's too much at stake For because they were afraid to become the narrative that describes your existence. And this is what frustrates me at times, is I'll talk to people and they say things like, I've got this ahead of me, I'm looking towards this, and I'm waiting for God to tell me something. I'm waiting for a voice. I'm waiting for him to give a command. And I want to say, like, you don't need to hear a voice to do what God has already commanded you to do. He doesn't repeat himself. And other people say things like, I'm just waiting for God to clear a path. I'm waiting for him to open a door. Yes, sometimes you need God to clear a path, but you know what you need to do other times? You need to kick down a door. Like, you need to actually create a path. Sometimes you need to pray. Other times you need to bring a machete. Sometimes you need to clear the path that's before you, because that's what God has for you. And this is what I want for you to know, is that the future, more than anything else, will not be shaped by good people or bad people. It will not simply be shaped by people of faith or people without faith. The future will be shaped by people of action. It is the people who do not simply have thoughts, but the people who get up and do something with it. These are the people who shapes the future. And so hear this, there's too much going on. It must be you. It must be you. It must be you who shapes that future. And so do not let your life be explained as your fear. Let your life be explained through the lens of your faith. That BCN is what I want for you. That BCN is what I want for your life and what I want for you to be a part of. So go live that out.